My co-author is Emily Ott, my graduate student. She's here in the room, and hopefully she can help me answer any questions that I'm not able to. And my name is John Galbraith, and I'll lead you through a philosophical discussion of what is soil structure and what is not soil structure. A soil structure identification is critical to description and classification of soils, and yet we often overlook it or take it for granted. We have the conceptual shape, size, and grade of structure that we list on our soil description sheets. But these properties of structure greatly influence rooting, gas exchange, microbiological and soil faunal habitats, especially very small microinvertebrates, and then also hydrologic properties of the soil. And the soil functionality and health evaluations are going to be dependent on proper and accurate description of soil structure. And we know that we're moving into an area where soil health and ecological site descriptions, all of those are going to be very, very important in our future. So we need to be able to describe soil structure accurately. Well, here are three articles that I was able to find about what defines what is soil structure and what is not. And some of these are tangential to that question. But these are three articles that I was able to find, one published back in 1965. Not much recent work. All right, going to standards and concepts, if we go to the field book for describing and sampling soils, version 3, its definition of structure is: soil structure is the naturally occurring arrangement of soil particles into aggregates that results from pedogenic processes. However, the definition of soil structure does not have any qualifying criteria, such as the presence of coatings, evidence of removals, or presence of pressure, what they call stress features, on surfaces. An example of this would be like a slick inside or a pressure surface. And we also have lithogenic and new anthropogenic shaped soil masses that have macropores, but I do not believe qualify as having soil structure. Is this soil structure? Just asking the audience, does it look like soil structure? I think most people would say that it does. You have a concept that you've been dealing with, a paradigm that you've dealt with in your experience. How about this? We have cutans coating macropore surfaces. I think almost all of us would agree this is soil structure. Is this soil structure? This is recently dried up silt on the soil surface. I think this may not be soil structure yet. How about this? This is a completely dense material. This is mined, reclaimed mine land, a sandy loam texture. On the bottom part, you can see stratification from deposition. And at the top, you can see a very tightly compacted zone. I do not see any macropores, and I described this soil and did not find any macropores down to 30 centimeters. I don't believe this is soil structure. This is a densic horizon at the surface. Okay, this is our concept of soil structure, and we have these classic pictures. They're beautiful. They work in all the textbooks and all the basic soils classes, but maybe we need to think about them a little bit further. So when is it soil structure? And in my mind, I came up with some ideas. Pedogenic aggregates are bounded by macropores intersecting in two or more directions. I thought that made sense. That might define the edge of a mass that we could call soil structure. But the macropores may have pressure stress features, again, such as pressure faces or slick insides. They may have coatings, or they may show the removal of organic or mineral materials. So the examples of coatings would be cutans, films of calcium carbonate or gypsum, albans, which are removal of clays in wet soils, reduced soils. This looks like soil structure. I see shapes. I see macropores that intersect, even though the one on the left shows parallel orientation. When is it not soil structure? Well, in my mind, again, soil masses that form from desiccation or from compaction in newly deposited sediment or soil material are probably not soil structure. I'll be showing you some examples of this in a minute. We have massive horizons that really should be excluded from having soil structure. We say that the soil is massive. It is structureless, but yet that's listed under types of soil structure. So if it has no soil structure, how can it have soil structure? This is structureless single grain on the left, and this is structureless massive on the right. Mark, this may tie right into one of your areas of interest right now. Okay, when is it not soil structure? Well, here's two examples. When it's rock structure, by definition, it includes fine stratification, 5 millimeters or less thick, in unconsolidated sediments, either aeolian, alluvial, lacustrine, or marine. And saprolite is also considered not soil structure when it's derived from consolidated rocks in which the unweathered minerals and pseudomorphs of weathered minerals retain their relative positions to each other. In other words, they're in the same position that they were in when the material was rock. It is now no longer rock, but the materials are still in the same position. This comes from the 12th edition of the Keys. So by definition, this is rock structure, where you have thin layering and this is dredged sand material. This is the best picture I could come up with for saprolite. You can still see the vestige of where the bedrock layering was. And then also a third place where we have a definition is in the new definition for human altered materials. And it talks about irregular structure shapes and densic or desiccated material. And these are where surfaces intersect irregularly in tangential or divergent directions, caused by traffic exceeding the shear strength of the compressed layer. So in other words, when heavy machinery or other types of traffic put more force on the soil so much that they exceed the shear strength, then you get movement and fracturing of the soil mass. In a second case, we have distortions in shape or shear planes across material with fine stratifications in areas never known to be subject to cryoturbation. The patterns are caused by mechanically exceeding the shear strength of the layer, and very similar to the finer material. So really, definition 8 applies to massive material, structureless massive material that's then been fractured by heavy weight, and definition 9 refers to sandy, single-grained material that's then been distorted by pressure. So first, an example of a dredged silty sediment dumped into a settling pond, and second, a sandy stratified dredged sediment that's part of a mineral sand mine tailing and then driven over by heavy machinery. So quickly, some pictures. This is a settling basin. There's a little bit of vegetation on the edge. In the center, you see polygonal shapes. Looks like most dry lake beds. Up close, you can see that the silty material, this is a silt loam texture, we believe, has dried into polygonal shapes. And you can see how that it is cracked widely from the dewatering. In the centers of these polygons, you can see the original color of the dredged material. There hasn't been much alteration there that we can tell by looking. You can see the fractured material up above. When we look inside one of these, again, we can see an oxidation rind on the outside. But again, not much. You can see that the orientation of the material, we pulled this apart. And when we pulled it apart, it came apart in the direction we pulled it. There were no macro pores. This surface, however, does have a coating. But these are soluble salts. This is very high salinity material. And this is ephemeral. Is this soil structure? It has a coating, but of an ephemeral material that could get washed away, dissolved. How about this one? Look at the shape. Did that match up with any of your conceptual shapes of soil structure? Or this one? This one, is a massive clod, aggregate. Here's another one. I don't see any coatings. I don't see any regularity to the shape. It is a mass of soil that holds together. These are some that I took a picture of. And look at the sharp edges on this. This would technically probably fall under angular blocky by definition, but these materials are new, just a few years old. So the question is, have they developed this shape through pedogenesis or simply desiccation? Does desiccation count as pedogenesis? Well, there's a variety in this picture. I'm going to separate these into the two in the middle that have red on the outside and the ones around the outside ring that do not have red. This is a look at the material that's closest to the surface, and it essentially keeps fracturing and turns into a mulch over time. But again, no coatings, no accumulation of organic carbon. There was no vegetation in this spot. Now, a close-up of this mass of soil shows that there are redox concentrations forming along the edges and even around a pore there. On this one, you can see the surface where roots were able to travel, and that looks altered. The material on the right-hand side, however, has the irregular, fractured-looking shapes. No consistency as to size or orientation. But you can also see that iron has precipitated on the surfaces, so now we have a coating. This is a close-up of one of those masses. Is this an aggregate? It certainly does not look like a pedogenic aggregate to me, but it now has a coating of secondary iron oxides. This is the material that we pulled from right underneath where there is annual vegetation and some perennial weeds that are growing. And you can see that it looks like the material in between the roots may be altered by addition of organic matter. We may be forming soil structure under vegetated areas, not under the bare areas. Now finally, a look at the swirling patterns, the contorted look, and there's a shear plane just to the right-hand side of the tape. Here's another one where you can see to the right-hand side where the wheel of the machinery traveled over this dredged sand when it was very wet. So to conclude, we think that a set of defining criteria, or at least a definition for soil structure, can be derived. The criteria can be used to determine whether to name a soil horizon as an A, a B, or a C horizon, which is critically important, I think. It's used in the identification of diagnostic horizons and soil orders. And in soil health and functionality assessments that are coming our way, it's the new thing. They may change due to identification of soil structure in farmland. In a recently plowed A horizon, is it soil structure because it falls apart into masses if it's been plowed just 1 week earlier? How about if it was plowed 11 months earlier or if it's no-till? We have a lot of variety out there. We need to put some thought into these as we go in to assess these areas. Also, when we assess mine lands, wetlands, and urban areas, especially reclaimed areas. And then stable soil masses may act like soil structure, but probably are not yet. However, pedogenesis can be rapid, just a few years. And before I go to questions, I summarized. That I think there are three types of soil masses or fabric. One is material that just has no macropores at all. One that has macropores that does not contain any coatings, losses, or stressed surfaces, and then other macropores that do contain those features. And I think that two terms could be proposed as used in human altered materials: fractured shapes, which you've seen pictures of, and contorted layering, which you've seen pictures of. Are there any questions? I'll start in the back and then we'll come to the front.
I'm interested in your interpretation. I'm doing urban soil mapping here in the Los Angeles area. Earlier you had quoted a Paul Schoenberger, and you mentioned that in order for structure to be defined, there has to be the result of pedogenic processes.
Yes.
And I find a lot of soils in the LA Basin area, on hill slopes generally, where you have transported materials and there's a soil structure, the aggregates are the remnant from the source material.
Yes.
So would you consider that soil structure?
That's a very, very good question. So. When humans transport a mass of material, a truckload full of material, in that process, many of the soil aggregates and their surfaces are destroyed or altered, scraped off, fractured in one way or another, but there are also remnants that are not. And what I look for is if I see what looks like a soil aggregate and I see a coating on it, such as clay film, or secondary calcium carbonate or something similar, I look to see what the orientation is. Do the macropores that are bounding that aggregate, are they matched by another macropore from an adjacent aggregate? Or is this aggregate simply floating in space, such as some of the clods that are aggregates that are seen in this picture? So I look for adjacency. That's the first thing. The second thing is orientation. If the aggregate is has some, in other words, if you look for the pedogenesis and the evidence is that the vertical surfaces are covered with calcium carbonate, and in this case you find that the surfaces covered by carbonate are at odd angles to the surface, I take that as a further evidence of disruption or transportation. So would I call those structure? I would call them fragments of soil structure. And I would describe them just like I would a fragment of a rock fragment. I would say 20% of the horizon contains aggregates transported in the material.
Yes. Have you considered pedoturbation by animals? And it sounds like the soil structure then maybe you could look at it at a scale,
No, I hadn't, as a matter of fact. So I think to repeat the question, let me see if I understand correctly. So you're asking, would I consider masses of soil that are moved by animals? Mm-hmm. Two-legged animals or four-legged animals?
How about all kinds of?
Any animal.
Any animal.
All right. Okay. And then I would say it's the same thing as the human transported material. Did the animal take an aggregate and move it out of its position, and is it no longer in its original position? If so, like a gopher digs a burrow, desert tortoise, leaves a subangular block in the spoil pile, okay, then I would describe it as a subangular block, but I would describe what percentage it makes up of that material, and I would indicate that it was moved by the animal of any kind. You had a question I didn't get back to you, I'm sorry.
I'm curious about your comment regarding how can you have coarse doesn't have one of the categories.
Any structure.
Okay, so you made the comment of how can it have structure if it doesn't have structure? So do you still condone the use of structureless as a way to describe that, or do you have some other idea on how you might?
No, I think that's a good, very good question. So I would put that into the category, of the type of soil masses or fabric that have no macropores. And that's how I would describe it. Soil material that has no macropores, whether it's single grained or massive, it has no macropores.
So John, that means you would get rid of structureless as a grade.
I would. I would move it into a different category. I know people complain when we have too many new terms and things like that, but it's listed under not grade, but shape
grade
of
structure.
Yeah, yeah, so it's not a grade.
Say it's weak massive or
correct.
Moderate massive.
Correct.
So you're always going to say it's structureless massive. I mean,
that's
see
true.
The intention there is to separate between single grain and massive, and that's
And I agreed to call it, fine, keep the term structureless, but if it is structureless, then it's not a type of soil structure.
That's a grade, though. Structureless is a grade. Not a type.
It's, okay. Well, that seems like a problem for soil taxonomy that we should discuss in the parking lot.
So, not that I know. But some people argue that fragipans, when they originally formed, were supersaturated and desiccated quickly, and then the prisms were desiccation fragments.
Yeah.
So is that prismatic?
Okay, so I would say if it has no coatings, no evidence of losses along the macropores, and what was my other one, no stress surface on that macropore surface, that it does not have structure yet. But as we know, as the fragipan ripens, we begin to get albands along the prism surfaces. We lose clay and we develop gray colors and other, and at that point then it would be structured. Marty?
John, I'm wondering about sort of the rates at which some of these processes occur.
Yes.
And I think these are very much related to the origin of the materials.
Yep.
And you mentioned in a couple of cases examples of dredged materials.
Right.
And my observations are that these materials are very dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you demonstrated that you could form these desiccation cracks in a year or two. But especially if these are from estuarine deposits and they contain sulfides.
Yes.
The development of coatings, of iron oxide coatings, jarosite coatings, those kinds of things can happen very quickly. In 3 or 4 years, these angular blocky aggregates can have coatings and stabilized, and it can be a very quick process.
Right.
But I think in many other kinds of materials, it might be very slow.
And I agree with you. That's why I added that caveat, but pentagenesis can be rapid. So depending, since I don't haven't done an extensive comprehensive study of lots of different materials and all, I would say you're right. Of course, the rate where you have materials that can bond together like clays and humus is going to be a lot different than material that's humus poor and clay poor. And so, some of these, I would say, would develop into structure maybe even within the same year. But others might take quite longer.
I'd like to ask just one other question. There's fairly tight cases when you get into the subsoil where you can see coatings or removals along the head surfaces. As I'm recollecting my own experiences, there's plenty of times when I'm looking in the upper part of the subsoil where it has what I would describe as deep, blocky structure.
Mm-hmm.
And I do, there are these sort of adjacent surfaces that form these macropores, but I'd say quite commonly I wouldn't be able to recognize any difference in color, coating, or removal along those surfaces.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the idea that you have to be, again, you know, these are the old, mature, you know, 50,000-year-old soils. And so I'm wondering whether or not the requirement that you have to be able to document coating or removal or some different, distinct difference at the surface is a realistic sort of requirement.
I'm just going to guess that if you look, if you put it under a scope, you would see a difference. If you were able to slice through that surface and look at it from both a perpendicular direction and then a parallel to the slice, I believe you would see a difference or find some kind of difference.
If you go to like our young glacial soils where we have very little clay, even in a thin section, you can't see on a subangular blocky unit or where it looks like anything has been removed. Mm-hmm. But clearly there's natural planes of weakness that you have, and you can find ones that, you know, sort of as you think about sort of a mirror image, mm-hmm. or that they follow each other's path. So,
well, let's think outside the box, Mark. What if the coating is a microbial population? And it's only the gels of the microbes. I mean, if water is passing down a macropore repeatedly, then you're going to have some organic source and you're going to have some microbial population along there. So even if you don't have secondary minerals deposited, there's something that's holding that mass together. And it wasn't just desiccation and then stability. There has to be something. And so it's probably maybe more difficult to find evidence. And on those sandy, younger soils, I can understand. I remember how difficult it was in those situations. So,
well, if you'll let me infer that difference, I'm okay. But if you make me be able to demonstrate it, then it becomes
a problem. Yeah. Well, this discussion was to generate discussion. So I think we did that. I'm trying to stretch your brains and make you think outside the box and question some of our standards and bases. And because we do need to get this clarified, I think. I'm afraid I'm out of time. There were two questions, and I'd love to discuss those with you if you don't mind staying a few minutes. But otherwise, I'd like to release the audience so they can go to the poster session. Thank you very much for attending the session, everyone.